So Sherlock Holmes decides to take Watson on a camping trip. I know, all sermons begin that way. And they go camping and they fall asleep, and in the middle of the night, Holmes wakes up and he looks up at the stars and he wakes Watson up. And he says, "Watson, what do you observe?" Watson knows he's being tested. So he says, "Well, I see there's a slight trail of stardust in the left, which means there must have been a shooting star, and I see the constellation of Orion, and I see the moon. It's not a full moon, it's not even a half moon, it's more like a gibbous moon. That's what I see," Holmes. Feels very proud of himself. He says, "Now tell me, what do you observe?" Holmes says, "I observe that while we slept, someone stole our tent." Sometimes the simple answer is the right one. And we engulf ourselves and inveigle ourselves in all these complex considerations when, in fact, things are relatively simple. And I want to spin a slight riff on a book that I read not long ago at the suggestion of one of you called Give and Take by Adam Grant, in which he talks about the fascinating fact that when you divide people up into takers, that one is self-evident, and matchers, that is, I'll do something for you, but only if you do something for me back, and givers, which is people who give without expectation of being rewarded, and you create personality profiles for all three, and then you study corporations, you find something fascinating. On the bottom of the corporation, as you might expect, are those who give. But on the top are also those who give. And again and again and again, the most successful in corporate life, when you profile them, are givers. Not 100%. But pretty high. The difference being that they're intelligent altruists. That is, they don't give and give and give until they're exhausted and other people think they can walk all over them. But they give because they believe that giving is the normal mode of being human. Not as a strategy, but as a way of being. He talks about the fact that when you give, you expand your network. When you give, you put yourself in the other person's position and you expand your vision of what it is to be human. And you can understand other people much better if you are a successful giver. And a successful giver is giving to people what they want and what they need. But in fact, as you might expect of a management book, as beautiful as it is, it's really ultimately about what do you get when you give. That you can succeed and expand your network and people will like you. And it's amazing how much more people are willing to do things for people they like. It seems a simple insight, but too often forgotten. When we praise those CEOs who are dislikable, as though that's in fact the golden road to success. When I think if those same CEOs were more likable, they could have done even more. But I want to talk about giving, not in terms of what it will get you, but in terms of what it will get you. That is, what it does inside of us to give, and how we can give. And what it means to give, because after all, Rosh Hashanah is about examining what we say and what we do, our conduct, our behavior, and understanding where we are on that continuum of kindness in the world. You can give with your words, you can give with your deeds. A story about giving with your words. So once there was a monastery in a small town that, like many religious orders, was dwindling and dwindling. And the head of the monastery didn't know what to do, because as they did worse, people got meaner. And where it was once a flourishing and harmonious place, now everybody was fighting with each other. And that, of course, didn't attract new recruits, and so it both shrank and grew darker. And finally, someone said, "You know, look, I know this is a radical suggestion, but I've heard there's a very wise rabbi in the town. Why don't you go ask him? He's as outside of our system as could be. Maybe he has an idea." So the man came, and he sat before the rabbi, and he said to him, "Listen, I know this sounds crazy, but this is what's going on at the monastery." And the rabbi said, "I know, I've heard." He didn't say it, but he could have said, "Sounds like my synagogue," but he didn't say that. He said, "And I don't know how to solve what ails the monastery, but there is one thing that I do know that you don't know." "What's that?" He said, "One of the people in your monastery is the Messiah." The man went back and he told everybody in the monastery. And everything changed. Now people treated each other kindly because they didn't know who the Messiah was. Now people flocked to the monastery because they would have the possibility of meeting the Messiah. And now it flourished. But of course, it didn't flourish because anything had changed. Nothing changed. It flourished because he turned people from takers into givers. From people who thought first of themselves to what is the possibility and the potential in this other person. After all, they could be the Messiah. Imagine if you treated people that way. Because after all, the Jewish tradition could be anyone. Could be you. But if it's not you, and it might not be, I'm working the odds here. Could be the person next to you. And you can change the world with deeds and stories. One of the most beautiful and often told high holiday stories, and I will tell you when I'm done telling you the story why I'm telling you the story, is Yud Lamed Peretz story, Im Lo Lamala, If Not Higher. It's a story about a Litvak, and a Litvak in Jewish tradition is somebody who's skeptical and cynical and doesn't believe anything, and he passes through a town, and it's before the high holidays, and his cart breaks down, and he can't get home. So he decides that he's going to spend Shabbat with this in this Hasidic town, and then he'll make it home just in time for Rosh Hashanah. So he goes into this little Hasidic shtibel, this place where all these Hasidim and their Rebbe are praying, and they see a stranger there. So they come up to him, they start to talk to him, and in the course of talking to them, one of the Hasidim says to him, "I want you to know that every Yom Kippur, our Rebbe ascends to heaven." And he thinks to himself, right. And then another Hasid comes up and says the same thing, and this happens over and over and over again. And he's thinking to himself, these are the most credulous people. They will believe anything. He decides to spend Rosh Hashanah there, and he hears the story from an even bigger group, because even in traditional synagogues, sometimes more people come for Rosh Hashanah. And he's so intrigued at the legend and so eager to disprove it that he decides he's not going to go home. He's going to stay for Yom Kippur and he's going to follow the Rebbe. So it's time for Kol Nidre and the sun is about to set. And before it does, he's peeking in the window of the Rebbe's house, and he sees him take off his normal garb, and he puts on the clothes of a lumberjack. And he grabs an axe, and he goes out into the woods, and he begins chopping wood. And the sun is about to set. And he gathers up all this wood, and he brings it to this isolated house in the middle of the forest, and he knocks on the door. And the Litvak hears an old woman answer the door. And she says, "I can't open it. I don't know who you are, but I don't want to talk to you." And the Rebbe says, "I'm just a lumberjack, and I have wood, and I have more than I can use, and I thought you're probably going to be cold for the winter, so let me just give you the wood." She says, "I can't pay you for it." He said, "Don't worry. You'll pay me another time. It's just going to be wasted here. I have it for you. Open the door. Let me build you a fire." So she opens the door. He goes in. He builds her a fire. He leaves the wood. He closes the door. He goes back home. He puts on the garb of the Rebbe, and he walks into the synagogue. But now he's late. It's towards the end of the service. And the Litvak follows behind him. And he stands in the back of the synagogue. And the end of Peretz's story is he became part of that synagogue, of that shul. And every time someone would say to him, "Do you know our Rebbe?" Every Yom Kippur he ascends to heaven, he would say, "If not higher." I've known that story many, many, many years. And I've told it here before. The reason I told it tonight is that I was given a great gift by someone who was very giving, and that's my father. And among the many gifts that he gave me, since he was a rabbi, is that he left behind several hundred, maybe more, index cards with stories and comments and poems and quotes that he accumulated over the years. And from time to time, I've looked through them. And a couple of days ago, I thought, it's time to get the old cards out and take a look. And I found this. This is cut out of a magazine, but it doesn't say what magazine. And I have no idea what year it was cut out, because it's just pasted onto a card. I know who it was from. It was from a man named James Hodgson, who lived in Salt Lake City, Utah, because it says that at the bottom. But here is the story, and you'll see why it reminds me of Imlo Lamala. He wrote, "I was lounging in front of the TV watching a second run Western when Dad came in from shoveling snow. He looked at me quizzically and said, 'In 24 hours, you won't even remember what you're looking at now. How about doing something for the next 20 minutes that you'll remember 20 years from now and enjoy every time you think about it?' 'What is it?' I asked. 'Well, son, there's 8 inches of snow on old Mrs. Woodbury's walk,' he said. 'Why don't you see if you can shovel it and get back home without her knowing?' I did it in 15 minutes. She never knew who'd done it. And Dad was right. I've enjoyed it every time I've thought about it." And I thought, that's the definition of the mitzvah. When he was writing about give and take, the title of the book could have been Mitzvah. To do a mitzvah is to do something kind for another person, not for yourself, but for them. But it changes you. You remember it. You're grateful you did it. In years of soliciting charitable contributions from people, I have never had someone come up to me afterwards and say, "You know that money I gave? I really regret it now." Many years ago, the philosopher John Locke made a fascinating observation that we all know, but we don't always know. He said, "Everything good in the world that people want has a limit. You can love food, but at a certain point you don't want to eat anymore. You can love sleep, but at a certain point you're tired of sleeping. The only thing that doesn't have a limit other than life that people want is money. Nobody says, oh, I have so much money I can't take anymore. But you see, that's a danger. And the hedge against insatiability is mitzvah, is giving of money, of words, of time, of kindness. So this year, go to the woods, do something for someone who needs it, and come back and let it be your secret. Do it again and again and again. Discover that by becoming someone who does mitzvot, someone who does kindnesses, you will change. And your life will be better. It will. Not by design, except by the way God designed the world. So, this is James Hodgson's gift to you by way of me, by way of my father. I know that I found this card for a reason. And I know what the reason is. You. Shana Tov.